Can I go back and ask a question? Right, first of all, and then number three, I suppose, was are there any, is there, who's the Viet Cong in the village?
The question was simpler than that. Is there anything you want to tell me about the Viet Cong?
Okay.
Answer, no. It wasn't pursued.
Okay. And if there was...
But you see, once a month, the head of household had to touch base.
With this person, either the school teacher or whoever. It's not touching base with an American. It's touching base with this school teacher or whoever. And there's generally only one person in a village? Okay. All right.
What we did is we would put together a little 2x4 shack.
Okay.
So that there ain't nobody else around.
Okay.
And when you go over and you touch base, and after you've seen this gentleman, he begins to chat a little bit. He's usually kind of a Scattergood Baines type. He's an elder in the village, able to discuss a variety of things. And if you do get some response out of the government, you begin to look at him in a slightly different light.
Okay, yep.
So if at some point that you begin to realize that the government is really not alien, that the government does have a sense of responsibility, that they are trying to do things, if at the same time you do see that there is a team of people that are being supported from the provincial level that are trying to set up defenses in the village, that are trying to do good works of a variety of sorts, helping harvest rice, providing protection when the rice is being... Because that's a big deal that they used to do, is to steal the goddamn rice after it was harvested. If you begin to think, well, maybe this leopard is starting to change his spots.
Okay.
Vietnamese were very suspicious, and with great, great reason. Census grievance was, I felt, one of the really great points, to short-circuit the fact that there was not a political system. That's really what it was. It was an ersatz system imposed to allow us to say, okay, we accept the fact that there are not normal political lines of influence, so we will put this on and hope to God that for the meantime we can jump-start this body politic.
And then from Kinh Hoa you move it around.
Well, see, what happened is we did this with last time. In Kinh Hoa, we could refine the thing.
Okay.
We knew what was going on. So I'd go down. I'd sit down with Chow. We'd go over the situation. We had a hell of a bright... We always put probably the brightest officers we had down in Kinh Hoa.
Was that John Woodsman?
No, that was later. We had John O'Reilly was there, Tom Ahern, a variety of people. But always very good. But basically, these people, don't put Morales' name down, please.
Okay.
But as such, this was a, then we could take a program such as this, and we took it up to, I got a villa out in Gia Dinh, which is a suburb of Saigon, set up a training school in Gia Dinh for census grievance people.
Okay.
So that we would go out and do the same thing, bring people in from that have been spotted in various villages, bring them in, run them through the training.
How much training? 12 weeks? Something like that? Not even that?
No. It wasn't that. It wasn't that long. I'm trying to remember now. We had a... I had a French-speaking case officer and a Matisse, Vietnamese-French gent who was very, very good.
Okay.
And they ran the school. We had we had trainers that we had, I guess we brought up from Kinh Hoa. But We trained in small groups, and it was a much faster process. And these were educated people, not educated, but they were certainly people, some
literate,
some
people probably, at least.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but they were quick on the upscale, and it was a pleasant surroundings. It was a well handled program.
Was the facility right near your villa?
Oh, this is the villa. This is the villa I found someplace. This is where we stuck them.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't mine.
Oh, okay.
I just found a house.
Okay.
And
And then they became cadre, and then they would go to other provinces?
No, they would go back to their own province.
Oh, okay, so they would come from all over the country.
That's right.
Okay, all right. Just as the revolutionary development people would come from all over the country to Vung Tau.
Right.
And they would be, when you say spotted in a village, would it just be like through census grievance also? I mean, through an informal, just people being there saying, well, this guy seems motivated, he seems intelligent, would you like to work in this program? Is that how it would work, very informally?
Very much so, yeah.
No,
it would be what?
People that Scotton or Kelly would be working for would send them down? Is that kind of what would happen?
Well, see, Scotton was out of that long before that, you see.
Right, okay.
And he worked for USA, he didn't work for the agency.
Right, okay.
So, you know, Frank was always, you know, kind of a Peck's bad boy as far as USIA was concerned.
Yeah.
And he, you know, always sort of doing other things. But what we would do, you see, we would have an officer or officers in a big province,
mm-hmm.
who would be responsible, working with the province chief that would assign one of his staff to be the RD liaison.
Okay.
So we'd have a guy that we could work with day in, day out. I also had a deal with the province chief that if my guy had any problems, he could see him. Notice? Then they would work down to the district level, where you would have a similar arrangement with the district. And then go into a village and say, okay, let's get the district chief and whomever can vouch for these kiddos. We would recruit the RD cadre, put them on an airplane, send them down to Vung Tau. And of course, one of the things about these guys had never been out of their villages before. This is pretty heady stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we would take them down, and the food was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've forgotten what the budget was, but suddenly these guys are eating.
Yeah.
They've got more protein in their system than they've ever had before,
mm-hmm.
and they can all stay awake in class.
Okay.
So our training program was vigorous as hell, but they all put on weight. They were all better. We treated them as soon as they came in the door. We treated them for worms. You figured that was, you know, it had to be the case, and it was in most instances. So they were in and they're listening to all sorts of you know, my telling them stories about the fairies and the dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And the great cultural heritage of the Vietnamese people. I mean, he had all sorts of myths, which were at least apparent to many of these people.
This is
Christ. Then he would work in how the political applicability of today.
Is he around? I'd love to ask him what his stories
were.
I mean, I've read Sir James Fraser, The Golden Bough.
Yes, I have too.
And it would change my life as a writer, because that's where I started learning about archetypes. And this is, I mean, I think you can understand why I'm interested in revolutionary development and the political part of it. I'm interested in the mythology that's behind these programs. If you could get more specific about that kind of stuff, I mean, how would he work a myth to make a person get politically motivated? I mean, this is to me the crux of the program. How did it work?
Let me see if I can remember one of them.
Okay.
It was always very funny. I, of course, reacted. I saw immediately. I thought that the ability to say to a peasant that you are part of a heritage. You stand tall, that you don't have to put up with this nonsense of a...
But this is what works everywhere. This is what the IRA does. This is what Mao does. I mean, this to me is the play of words and meanings and symbolism is what political warfare is all about.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Spectacular. Well, and of course,
and obviously, it's the same for you, too, right?
That was very funny, of course. The more cynical of the guys that worked for me always used to refer to Ma as Father Ma. And they would, they used to always, you know, poo-poo the fairies and the dragons. But again, I'm just trying to think one good story they had of it. It has to do with an infant, of course, that's not unusual. It's an infant that... mystically is given the power, and he takes the sword and slays the dragon.
Okay.
It's very involved in that, good God, and everything.
Because, you see, I went back and reread Fraser, and he doesn't have Vietnam in there at all. He has every other country in the world in his book, except myths of Vietnam. And it's amazing, but that's the one, I think the one country in the world that he didn't get, have one of his sources in.
I don't know about Mai, whether Mai got out or not.
Yeah.
Mai was controversial, and
controversial in what respect?
What kind of an army officer is this talking about fairies and dragons?
Okay.
Come on.
Okay. What was his motivation? I mean, he really just
brilliant.
More intelligent than these
brilliant.
Other people. Okay.
He was trilingual. I'll tell you how brilliant he was.
Okay.
He was trilingual, and of course I had a steady stream of VIPs that wanted to take a look at the program.
Right.
And I'd call mine, and I'd not discuss it all of it all over the phone. I say, I'll be arriving with a guest at 10 o'clock. I'd get off an airplane, and I'd have anybody.
Okay. McNamara.
Well, yeah, all right. Clark Clifford, Ted Heath. Orville Freeman, Jake Javits, and on.
Okay.
Mai instinctively could spot the bright ones. So when I kid you not,
yeah.
If he talked to adults like, what's his name, that impossible congressman from Ohio, Wayne, the Elizabeth Ray, the dolly on his payroll.
Oh, okay.
Wayne, oh, Christ. He was about as dumb. Oh, worst, one of the worst days I've ever spent in my life. Disgusting. But Mai, I would watch him. Mai could sense, and if he, the level at which he pitched it, if he was talking to somebody that he decided was bright, he would be absolutely in the abstract and, and get a great dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
If he was talking to some dope, it would be an entirely different spiel. Now that's
he would just be very literal and straightforward, and make it all spell it all out very easily. Okay, so he's just a brilliant guy, but and then controversial because his brethren officers don't like him.
Well,
having access to this budget and this program
and influence with
the province chiefs.
Well, not only that, he'd been away from it that long, and what happened to this program? If we can skip around a little bit.
Okay.
We get to a point where, here I am, but the CIA is running a political program in a sovereign country where they don't even know what the hell we're teaching.
Okay.
I had two. I took two down. I took Key down. I did all the right things. But what kind of a program could it be that had only one sponsor, the Central Intelligence Agency, that said that it was doing good? It had to be sinister.
Okay.
Any red-blooded American could understand that. What the hell is the CIA doing?
Yeah.
Running a program on political action.
But not as far as E and 2 are concerned.
No, of course not. Of course not. My point was the impression that we were facing.
Okay.
So, I sat down with my boss and said, I think that we're going to find ourselves. Yeah, we got a lot of interest. Charles Collingswood came in, CBS, and he thought it was terrific, and I said, okay. So we worked out a deal. I signed a guy to Charles Collingswood, and he did a CBS
really?
Piece on this, yeah. You may want to take a look at it.
And was your boss at the time Pierre De Silva? Or had
by the time
Jorgensen
that
come in?
Jorgie would probably take me. Because that was after the bombing. Oh, yeah, it was well after the bombing.
Okay, so now we're into summer of 65 or something.
Oh, yeah.
Easily. Okay.
But the point that by early... and into 66. But 65, 66. So I said I thought that we should, you know, find ourselves, you know, in a position where we were vulnerable if we were supporting the thing all by our lonesome. So I went out to try to get some co-sponsors, at least for the record. So they weren't easy to come by.
Now, is this within Vietnam?
Yeah,
okay.
So what I asked the, what we decided to do was we talked. Key saw the wisdom of it, and so did too. So they offered up a general,
is he
head of the Revolutionary Development Program, General?
Okay.
What happened is this: I explained to Key and to Chu. I said, "Look, our problem is we need somebody on your side where I can touch base."
So they created the Ministry of Revolutionary Development.
Precisely.
Okay.
So, but before they did, they said, "Okay, we got a guy that we think will work."
Okay.
So I picked this guy up in the morning, and. I'm just sorry. I just have a mental block.
Is it Thang?
Yes. I'm Tom.
Right.
Thank you very
okay.
much.
So and General Lansdale becomes his liaison, or was he somewhere else? Okay. All right. Because he wrote me and told me he was Thang's counterpart.
Well, that's right. That's right. What happened is, anyway.
Okay.
I picked him up and I took him down. We went through the whole day, and he's a big guy for Vietnamese, and he's a mathematician, he's an artillery officer, and bright, Jesus. But he's kind of a strange-looking guy, because he's got a big head, and he had a little hat, and he didn't smile, didn't say a thing. And we just went through the whole deal. I explained to him, we spent the day, just the two of us, walked through classrooms, sat down with Mai, he asked questions, and we were off, the two of us. Walking at just about the end of the day, we're about ready to go back to the airport. So I said something, that's just, you know, this is what it's all about. He said, well, the president and the prime minister have said to me that they wanted me to put together an RD program and start to work, do this and do that and do that. And I said, yeah. I talked to them. He said, you've already done it.
Okay.
So I said, thanks. So he said, I think we better do business together. I said, well, this is really what we would like to do. So I decided I really had an ally. So I started traveling with him, taking him around and showing him the country.
Okay.
And he was indefatigable. He went every place. You couldn't, he was just a beaut. I didn't have the time to spare, so I had a guy going with him, and he was just beautiful.
Is that Mark Huss?
No.
No, okay. You don't have to tell me.
Well, what happens is, this is like the seven layers of Troy that we're talking. I feel like Schliemann because these people are in different levels.
Yeah.
Huss was much later.
Okay.
It says Ed Lansdale. Ed Lansdale was an invention of Hubert Humphreys. I'm sure you know that.
I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. The idea was we did it before, we could do it again. So, Ed Lansdale came out 2 years too late.
Okay. You had started it in, its program had started in 63 and been done by 65, and he came out in 65 and it was already done.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he came out and he brought a lot of his old cohorts. A couple of them were agency guys that he'd suborned before. He brought them back, and he had some Army people, and he had some retired folk. And there was really nothing for them to do.
Okay.
So he was the senior liaison. Was it special liaison? I've forgotten what they call Ed's. And I like Ed Lansdale. I have nothing but great admiration for him.
I've heard it, and this might seem unfair, but I heard him described as a fifth wheel in terms of RD, that it really had been completed and there was nothing really for him to do. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Well, we both agreed. I mean, this is a very bright gem. I spent 2.5 hours briefing his full group about a week after they arrived. And it was fairly clear that, and I went, you know, completely, my boss said, tell him everything. I said, okay, fine. So I went through the whole smear, and there really wasn't a great deal to be done.
So he would advise on fine points and say, well, maybe there should be 20 in this team instead of 30 or something like that, or?
Nope.
No?
I saw none of it. I knew all of his people.
Yeah.
I guess they had been there. Oh, no, that's not so. I've got my time. They had been there, I suppose, about 6 weeks, and not one of them had ever called on me. And I said to Jorge, it's not interesting. He said, maybe we better brief him. So I told him the whole story, and nobody came to see me after that. I thought it was rather interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
So basically, Ed was very good with the Vietnamese, and he loved, what he liked to do is to get them together, and he took up tenderly, what the hell was his name? He was a folk singer, Vietnamese folk singer.
That, I don't know. Okay.
Interesting guy. I had gotten him to write a song for Montel. My and I decided we needed a song. So he helped us, guy, he came down. Well, the graduation ceremonies at Vung Tao were something else.
Pomp and circumstance?
Boy!
Yeah.
At night, total darkness. And then the one candle lit, and the candle said, oh, listen, the schmaltz. Remember, these are peasant kids that have never seen anything quite like this.
I just got back from SeaWorld in, you know, Orlando with the
pageantry was absolutely spectacular.
Okay.
But at any rate, go on. So what we had to do, I said, okay, let's do something. We're going to have to get a joint office.
Okay.
So I found an office someplace, or the station found an office in, I guess the government came up with it.
Okay.
So we went over and had our logistics people put in offices and clean the whole place up and put in, you know, all the right things and paint it. And so this was an office where we could jointly live. Then I had to go. I had to get somebody to run the office.
Okay.
So Tang said, who do you want? And I said, I want Chow. But first I went to Chow, and Chow said, I'll resign before I go.
Yeah.
So he and I got into a real pissing contest. And
is Mai gone by this time?
Well, no. You see, that's the problem. I want a Chow in town.
Yeah.
There's a colonel in the bloody army.
Yeah.
And not to tinker. Well, you never get all of your wishes. Once I got Chow, I finally forced the transfer, and then he was so damn mad that, and he was in a permanent pout. So he decided he was going to go down to to Vung Tao, and he was going to shape the place up, which is what we really didn't need, because here you have two dynamic personalities.
So you know,
couldn't stand
my Tao. Okay. Okay. I see. Okay. And this is almost a result of the fact that Lansdale shows up because he needs a... No. Okay.
There's nothing to do. I said, Let's back up. Basically, I said, we cannot have the CIA as the sole sponsor of this.
Okay.
So I went to Barry Zorthy. I said, Barry, how about, you know, acting as a, you know, give us some.
Okay.
Fine. I talked to Mac V about getting an officer assigned.
Okay.
They said, fine, they would do that. I had Abe give me a guy. In this, much of it was really, obviously, you know, window dressing.
Okay.
Simply because you have an ongoing, fast-breaking program, where we had the funds, we had the logistics, we had the equipment, everything else. So in terms of, we had the transportation. So really, what we were trying to do was to say, okay, everybody in this mission, by this time, Lodge thinks it's great, and so that was really where we stood. So we
I
had
understand.
This office that really,
okay.
that, you know, I couldn't do much business out of there because I really needed our own COMO system back, you know, mm-hmm. to talk to people. But it, at least for the record, it looked pretty good. We had a MACV guy down at and an aid guy and a USIA guy down at Phong Tao. And so all the bases had been touched.
Okay. When does Bob Eschbach take over? When does Jean Sauvageau come down? When are these people who come down after?
Yeah.
These are people who come down. Is Sauvageau the MACV guy?
No. Well, in a sense, okay. I was in the Delta. Son, what the devil? I don't know what it was. Yeah. I took Tom down, and we had a meeting with the three corps commander to brief him on to brief him on what was going on and what was expected of him, how Mac B could help.
Okay.
And the commanding officer, Lunch, came up to me and he said, "Yeah." He said, "Just done." He said, "I'm going to chat with you." And I said, "Yes, sir, brother." I said, "I have Officer Grimani's dad. I think would be just natural for you."
Okay.
And I said, "Oh." So I said, "Well, he speaks Vietnamese and he's a very interesting fellow." I said, "Fine." So I arranged to have Jean come up to see me.
Okay.
Well, of course, when I met Jean, I said, "Oh, Christ, you know, talk about my being an oddball in the army. Here's a guy that kept insisting on wearing black pajamas and sleeping in villages."
Okay.
Good God, you know, he had also had fallen under the spell of John Van.
Mm-hmm.
I decided I just had to have John, so I arranged to get him assigned to me. And he went out to census agreements.
Okay.
So John was terrific, because, you know, French and Vietnamese. And most of these older ducks could speak French, and it worked out very well. My officer was a French speaker, and Matisse, of course, was a French speaker.
So Vagio had no French then? Just Vietnamese.
I guess you're right. Yeah, I'd forgotten that. Yeah, that's right. But he was, he just, I'm sure the Army didn't know what the hell they had in this country.
Yeah. Who was the three corps commander? Is that Davison at that point, or is that before Davison? That's it. Since the title. I can find out, because I'm going to talk with, I have an interview scheduled with Sauvageau. So
he is a charming guy.
I'm talking on the phone to him, but it's just so smooth. So smooth. Northrop, East Asia.
How is that right?
He was in Hanoi a year ago. He goes all over.
Well, he's so earnest and so sincere. He's a dear fellow. I think you'll like him.
Mm, I'm looking forward to it. I've been trying to get some time to see him. So anyway, he comes down.
So we had
maybe, is that maybe 65, 66, something like that?
It was 66, probably.
Okay. Very good.
But you see, at this point, all we were trying to do was to expand this thing and, you know, say that there's at least plausible denial that the agency gives. So. And so that was Bob Comer had come out, and Chords had been formed.
Okay.
And,
now that's, this is getting into 67 then.
No.
Chords didn't form until 67.
Oh, my dear fellow.
OCO, there's the Office of Civilian Operations.
Yeah, but, wasn't Comer the first Chords?
Yeah. He is. First step Chords.
Okay, you're right. I'm sorry, because I spent, I left Vietnam in the summer of 66, and I was back out there by the next summer.
Okay.
I was there for 3 months, so just that was okay. What I was doing, because I'd known Comer, of course, back here. I had a little time warp there between that summer, and that's right.
Okay.
But at any rate, it was, by the time I was getting, I got ready to get the hell out of there in the summer of 66. And we had a pretty well established program was operating just about every province. And I'm doing well.
Okay. And then your assignment completed, you returned to Washington? Okay. And then I understand you, is that when you became, started working with George Carver? Okay.
Yeah. On Helms of Staff.
What did you think of Carver? Can you tell me? I understand. He's very ill right now and I can't get to see him. And I think he's seriously ill.
Well, he had a quadruple bypass. You know, he collapsed after the Oxford Cambridge boat race here. You know, George was a coxswain when he was at Oxford.
Okay.
And he got onto the goddamn boat and right on the dock had himself a massive heart attack on television. 53. No exerciser he.
Yeah.
Rotund.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, George is an exceptional guy. Smart. Jesus, he's smart.
Okay.
And he's really, he's a consummate politician in the best sense of the word.
And he headed the CIA Vietnam Task Force. Is that right? Or
no.
Thinking group or working group for Helms?
No, he was the special assistant for Vietnamese affairs.
That's right, okay.
So what we had, I was the deputy, and we had, we kept a situation room, all source information, order of battle, statistics. It was a very impressive deal. We had an eclectic group. We had people with all sorts of backgrounds that we had on our staff. We had an army major that was assigned to us who ran the situation room. We had people from all parts of the agency, researchers, analysts, military analysts. We had, and we really were responsible. Helms was smart. Another smart jet.
Mm-hmm.
Why get in the quagmire when you can let somebody else get in the quagmire?
Okay.
So, well, of course, George, we had the non-group, which was Bill Bundy, followed by Bill Sullivan, which really was responsible for the day-to-day U.S. involvement in Vietnam. You had the White House was represented, the Joint Chiefs was represented, USIA, who else? We had that for three days a week. Most of the stuff that had to be handled, and all the sensitive and all the back channel stuff went through us. But Vietnam itself, the Vietnam portion of the agency had been expanded greatly in the summer of 66, so that you had a, you know, that group that was backing up the station had to be big because the station was the damn big.
Okay. That special assistant group is a big group.
No. We had probably, I don't know, 12, 14, 15, 16 people. No, what I'm talking about is the East Asia Division branch that would normally be backing up the station okay. had to be huge because of the size of it. So
that's okay,
it.
All right.
So that's Jim Ward.
Is that after Colby?
No. You're,
all right, yeah.
Colby was a division chief. It was within a division, you had the Vietnam Task Force.
Okay, so it's Colby is the East Asia Division. Jim Ward is headed the east of this Vietnam group within that. Okay. All right. Please forgive me. I know I have some information on the background, but I don't have everything. I'm also coming from left field rather than from the inside. Okay. So when you went back for 3 months in 67, what was the nature of that assignment? Was it to check up on RD?
Oh, I or is it obviously, because I was working full-time on Vietnamese affairs, just to see what's going on, the whole thing. And the same way, I did the same thing the following year.
Okay. May I use your bathroom? Did you have any involvement with the PRU program? And I understand that there was a training facility for PRU in Vung Tau. Were you around for instituting that?
Started that one too.
Okay. Through Bill Riddell? Or was he not the first? Can you tell me a little bit about the development of that program?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, census grievance produced a good bit of intelligence.
Okay.
So did the cadre program. There were areas that that really were so tough and so inaccessible that there was just no intelligence coming out. Some of the Chu Hoi, some of the basic defectors, but we never really had what we thought was a good enough handle on continuing intelligence, which was a terrible, terrible blind spot if you're trying to fight a war that's got all the other built-in problems of that one. So the object of this game really was just to train people in a variety of tactics. It was a highly selective program. You had to find a good leader. Okay. And normally, if you could find a lieutenant, somebody on a young, vigorous young infantry officer that had been assigned to a province chief staff, and that was one of the biggest problems. He was trying to get a good, to spot a guy and somehow use a little body English. What we used to do was to try to get our own officer in the province to take a look around and see who, and then go to the province chief and try to sell him on the program. Well, this is a program. They understood this well. But the object of the game was very simple. It was, small unit tactics, the ability to get in and to abduct, to get in and try to take prisoners and get the hell out. With some good sources for interrogation.
Is this something that you began, or is this something that I was talking with Stu Methvin?
Mm-hmm.
And Stu Methvin, who I'm supposed to try and get together with, and every time I come to Washington, he's away.
He's hard to get.
He said that he's the one who started the program.
Oh yeah.
That he brought it from Laos. That's a
right.
direct quote from.
I think that's about right. Yeah.
Okay.
Stu worked for me.
Okay. Is he your deputy?
No.
Okay, he's just the head of
no,
your...
No,
he,
Stu,
is he the original head of the PRU program?
Stu had worked primarily with Montagnards in Vietnam.
Okay.
And...
So he's like in 2 Corps?
Primarily. But he... The way it worked out, when the gent that I replaced left, and I guess it was maybe 4 months in the regnum, and Stu was acting.
Can you tell me who you replaced?
Yeah. Cliff Stradley.
Stradler?
Strathern.
Strathern.
But then Stu became sort of a roving mountain yard specialist.
Okay.
Because he knew the mountain yards very well. He knew the people who knew the program. We had a training camp up in Pleiku for the mountain yards,
okay,
as well as the one in Bogota.
In Pleiku, because mountain yards wouldn't react well in Vung Tau with Vietnamese because of the ethnic differing difficulties?
World War I.
Okay.
Georgia training camps. You didn't mix the blacks and whites.
All right, very good.
No, the the Vietnamese really have no time for the mountain yards. The mountain yards have no time.
Yeah, no, I heard it was all out war. Especially in 64, wasn't there? There was a revolt. You know, so, okay. And was Stu the head of the training camp there? Or
no,
not?
No,
no, okay.
No, that was somebody else.
But he's
no, he was sort of ambassador at large. He was.
Okay. And is he running programs like CRU programs in different provinces?
No, he was generally available, really, to kind of floating advisor throughout any of the provinces where there were mountain lions.
Okay, okay.
Because he had all sorts of young mouse experience as well as we used to have the mountain lion program before we turned it over to the military.
Special Forces, right? And that happens around 64, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I met a guy who was in the 77th Special Forces, and he was in Vietnam in 55,
mm-hmm,
working with Montagnard, so that was a very interesting story.
Yes. No, Stuart,
okay.
To the military. Well, what it was is we worked with them with the special forces. The turnover was that we got out of the program, and the army was to take it over, lock, stock, and barrel.
And MACV starts directing special forces.
That's right.
As opposed to CIA.
That's
okay.
Right. That's right.
But the same people stay there in place. They just have different managers.
That's right.
Okay. Is Special Forces pretty much limited to two corps, or are they all over the country?
Oh, pretty much two corps. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Getting back to CRU and Vung Tau, when do you start setting up CRU training at Vung Tau? When the idea of, you know you want each of your province chiefs to have a CRU contingent. You know, when does that become like a formalized program that way?
I suppose about January 65.
Okay. And this is still before Bill Riddell?
We were doing some training. We were doing some training, okay, at Cat Lock.
Okay.
But obviously we had such a greater facility once we had the overall peninsula.
Yeah. So you do end up with that whole peninsula.
Great hunk of it.
Okay. Is Joe Vaccaro a person who's involved with the CRU training at this point? He's also a person I'm trying to get in touch with. I don't know if you would know where he's at.
I don't.
Okay.
No, Joe Joe was a special forces officer, or non-combat. Okay. Took a shot. And I guess really invalided out, and he liked Vietnam, and he stayed, and he got a job with AID.
Okay.
He was working up at I Corps. He was working on...
I think he's in Quang Ngai.
No.
No.
Well, he was in Quang Ngai one time, but he was obviously much more interested in what we were doing.
Okay.
And so I went to... I met him and chatted with him, and he looked interested. So I went to AID, and asked if they would be... obviously, he'd be happier, and they'd be happier with a vigorous young... type in, so he was just sort of seconded to me, although he still worked for AID, and I wrote his fitness report. And he was coming up to the end of his tour, so I worked out a direct hire for him, so he was able to leave AID. He came back here and spent more time. He'd learned a lot of Vietnamese while he was there, and he did some formal Vietnamese training here. And then came back up for another tour, so he was in various places, but by that time I was on that year.
You're back in Washington?
Yeah.
Okay. Has Mai left Vung Tau?